And when we come to talk like this, we're really a member of a big group of people that know about each other. We're representatives, if you like, of an energy which has been available on this planet for 5,000 years. And I once heard somebody say to somebody like me, well, look, if you've been working all this time, why is the world in the state that it is? Why is the world the way that it is? Why is it like this? And that person said, well, if we hadn't been working for the past 5,000 years, then this world would be a radioactive cinder by this time. I also heard another one of my teachers said to me that this world is a factory. This world is a factory for the production of enlightened people. And you learn your lessons on the astral plane between lifetimes. And when you come down here onto the earth, he said, this is the examination hall. And he says, it doesn't matter if you fail the test one day, because you'll get presented with the same test the next day, and again, until you've passed it. So he said, don't you worry about it. And then, when you graduate, when you pass over, and you've got your summa cum laude, BSc, piled higher and deeper, etc., then you never come back. So there's a process of education going on here on this planet. And there's a beautiful book called the Talmud. It's sort of Jewish. And there's one beautiful line in it that I really like. And it says, God is not nice. He is not your uncle. So, whenever you get into problem with your marriage, whenever you get into problems with your job, whenever you get into problems with your children and the people around you, just remember that this is all a big test. And smile and be happy. Because all you've got to do is to develop yourself enough so that you can pass the test. It's very simple. It's just an examination. We're all very good at those, aren't we? Well, next to the university like that. We're all very good at passing tests. So, as I was saying, I'm sort of here as a representative, if you like, of a great group of people throughout the world. And I was very glad to hear today that one of them has graduated. His name is John Denver. And he just fell into the sea from an aeroplane. And usually I like to warm up an audience with some chanting and some meditation, because you know, we're all blocked. We sort of come out from a cold environment and all the blockages there, we sort of, see, what, you know, impress me, sort of thing. You know, you sit there and go, well, there's one way to do that, and that is to get audience participation. And there's a beautiful song from John Denver that he sang for his wife called Annie's Song. And as we well know, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, masters have been the most famous poets that this world have ever produced. And they sometimes get into trouble, particularly in Arabia, where they start singing the Song of Solomon, or something like it. And when Jalaluddin, the great Sufi poet, mystic, and master, who started off the whirling dervishes of Islam, the most famous Sufi. And Sufism is the mystical heart of meditation of Islam. So when he started singing the praises of God, the Muslim clerics stood back aghast, because they thought he was talking about something else. So when I listen to a beautiful song like Annie's song, I don't think about the connotations of the song. I simply take it as a praise for the energy of the world. So what I like to do is to sing it for you, and then we can all sing a verse together. I guess the energy's moving, you know. And we'll sort of say it's in honor of John Denver, who's a nice guy. You fill up my senses like a walk in the forest, like a mountain in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in a desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. Come let me love you, come love me again. Come, it's for all Christians, this one. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you, let me drown in your laughter, let me dance in your tears. Come let me love you, let me always be with you. Come let me love you, come fill me again. For those that don't know the words, la 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 la. Come on, Bajan. La 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 la. Come let me love you, come fill me again. Lights down, please. Sit up straight. Meditation time. And before we meditate, I always like to do a chant. And the chant I want to start off with tonight is not just a chant. It's not just a bhajan. It is mantra yoga. And the purpose of mantra yoga, like any yoga, it's a technique for you to get in touch with yourself. It's like Jacob's ladder. It's to allow you to climb upwards. And the chakra that has to do with sound is the chakra, the disc, the wheel, the ding-ding petals of the throat. The one just above the heart. It's higher. It's to do with purification. And because all of us who are not enlightened are so full of blockages and pain and negative emotions, we all need to have some technique to awaken our higher powers. And these techniques of mantra yoga have been developed to do just that. The difference between merely singing a song, a bhajan, and mantra yoga is one of visualization. And we're going to be chanting Om Shanti. Shanti means peace, perfect peace, that peace for the Christians which passeth all understanding. And Om is the root word for Amen. sacred word of the Hindus. And when I say sacred, I don't mean that it's just something you do in church or in a ritual. I mean, it's like a ladder that's going to take you upwards. And so many people take these techniques, these rituals, these things, and they place the ladder on the altar and they go down, "Oh, holy ladder, take me up to heaven," instead of climbing up the bloody thing. So I want you to use the technique without any prejudice. And when we chant Om, I want you to know that it's three syllables. A, U, and M. And when we chant Ah, Aum, Ah, A, I want you to concentrate, to focus your mind on your base chakra, at the bottom of your spine, or as my Zen master friend says, at the bottom of your deepest bottom, from the well of Yggdrasil. Yeah? So when we go, ah, I want you to focus on it, but also, I want you to make that ah, make your bottom vibrate. Have you ever had your bottom vibrated? And it's up to you to do it. You can do it all by yourself. To make your bottom vibrate. And then, you see, this is the important bit, you see. Getting the bass note working. Have you ever noticed that in an octave there are seven notes? No? Yeah, it's true though, you know. There's seven notes in an octave. You know how many chakras there are? Seven. Strange that, isn't it? Why should they choose seven notes? I mean, Schoenberg had 12. There's no reason for it, except that most things that have been passed down for thousands of years have been passed down from masters, enlightened masters who invented them. And mantra is one way in which you can climb the seven, what are them things called? Ladder. Seven step ladder. You can complete the octave. See, it all comes in now, doesn't it? You know, all these people talking about the same things. And here we are, doing it. Ah, bottom of your deepest bottom. Visualization, sound, vibration. Keep that vibration going all the time as you're moving the energy up into the heart, where you will chant you. Because when we connect heaven and earth is the base chakra, when we have a line going down from heaven to earth, then we put the arms on the cross, goes through the heart. Because you cannot develop yourself without developing your heart, without becoming less selfish. In the sheer knowledge of enlightened self-interest, that what goes around comes around. As you give, so you shall receive. So the more good things you give out doesn't necessarily come back from the person that you give it to. The universe gives back 100-fold. And this is the lesson of selflessness, of opening the heart. You. And you are the heart. And the heart comes out in the hands. Sorry. The hands. And when you have completed the channel twixt heaven and earth and awoken your heart, then you are the hands of God on this planet. I mean, who else is going to do the work? You've got the free will to do that, or the opposite. And what you've got to learn is that there is no alternative. Tina, there is no alternative, because anything else leads to pain. Remember, God is not nice. He is not your favorite uncle. R-U-M. M. Take the vibration and the visualization up behind the nasal cavity, all the while keeping that R going, connecting you with the earth. Move the vibration up into the third eye, in the middle of the brow center, and then move it up into the crown center, and as your breath fails you, take that vibration up into the sky as high as you can. And when I chanted this with my teacher from India, I did this with him. And when I'd finished doing it, I found I was 400 feet up in the air. Well, I wasn't really, but my sight was right up in the air. And I looked upwards, and he was right up above me. And he says, come on, come on up. And it's through experiences like that, and there have been many more in my life, you know that there is truth in what is being said. And remember, all these masters are saying exactly the same thing, in different words, in different techniques. There are many paths up the mountain. But once you're on the top of the mountain, you can see all the paths. They all lead to one spot. So what I'll do is I'll start off. Sit up straight, sit up straight. None of you slouching around. Good grief. Remember, I'm not nice, I'm not nice. Good grief. Sit up straight. And I'll start off with the first line. And then after that, we'll all join in. There are about four lines, lasts about 5 minutes. Close your eyes. Concentrate on breathing deeply into the abdomen, the seat of all your negative emotions. As you move the abdomen, you just get rid of all these negative emotions. Some people can't even breathe in the abdomen, you know. The Americans reckon that 30% of all people cannot breathe into the abdomen. And I once had a class of people with multiple sclerosis. And none of them. They all had a wasting disease, a lack of energy. You know, you can live for weeks without food. You can live for days without water. But you take away the breath. And how long do you last for? 4 minutes? 5 minutes? Breath is your source of energy. So just sit there a while and breathe. Yeah, put your hands over your belly. Just breathe into your belly. Sit up straight. Cock the base of the spine a little bit forwards. Now just breathe into your hands. How much can you breathe into your hands? Not in your solar plexus, a bit lower, where your belly button is. That's it. Can you breathe? Can you feel your belly moving? Remember, that's where you entered into this life. Through the belly button. That's where all life is implanted. Into the belly button. Food is breath, and breath is life. And if you find that you cannot breathe into the abdomen, then feel really lucky. You've found something that can save your life, can stop you getting ME and MS. Just lie there in bed every morning and practice for 10 minutes. And then just notice when you stop breathing into the abdomen. It should be completely automatic. I'll chant the first line, and then it's your turn, line by line. Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Also give breathing practice. Take a deep breath in. Same line. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. It's good to keep the volume down. The more sweet, the more silent you can make this chant within yourself, then the more potent it is. So close your eyes, and just very gently, I'll be doing it a bit louder so you can hear me, but just very internally. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. And as Jalaluddin Rumi said, talking is such sweet pain. Seems such a pity to break that great depth of silence which we find within ourselves. And really, there is no need to talk. Because my words can only be partial. And if you really want to hear the truth, then listen to the silence between the words. seven stages of energy enhancement are to do with, first of all, the grounding of negative energies, clearing out the base chakra. And as we all know, as we sing the song, the thigh bone is connected to the knee bone, the knee bone's connected to the ankle bone, the ankle bone's connected to the toe bones. Hear the word of the Lord. Base chakra is connected through the legs to the earth. And the source of our great energies, the starting point of all of our great energies, starts at the bottom and goes right to the top, from the base chakra to the crown chakra, stopping off at the heart a little way in between. But unless you have deep roots, unless you have cleared the blockages out of your legs, all those injuries we get to the legs, all those arthritis of the legs and the hips, they're all to do with blockages in the base chakra. Base chakra is a part of our mind. If anybody's into computers, then each chakra is a parallel processor for the mind, dealing with different functions. Remember that only one of your chakras is intellectual, but it's the rest that causes us to have such an unhappy time on this planet. Who amongst you has got a very high emotional IQ? Who has accessed their unconscious? Most of the time we paddle around in a very narrow frequency range in the mind. And as we go into meditation, we think, hallelujah, we've got into the alpha region. My teacher one day went to Stanford University in the USA, and they were going to measure his brain waves. So they taped him all up with the various bits and pieces, and they said, right, start meditating and we'll see where your brain waves are. And he said, well, I'm always in a state of meditation, it doesn't matter to me, I can just be talking away. And so they sort of had a look and they said, hey, we can't find you in the alpha region, you're not meditating. And he said, well, perhaps you'd better look somewhere else. So they went into the beta region, which is sort of like very deep muscle stuff. Wasn't there. But they found all these very strong, very regular waves in the delta region of the brain. Now, the delta region is that region that deals with you when you're absolutely unconscious, when you're asleep, when you're anesthetized, when you're out to the world. It's the very depths of your unconscious. And there was Swami Satchidananda talking away in a deep state of meditation, looking as though he was completely anesthetized. And the depths of your unconscious reside in the bottom of your deepest bottom. You didn't know you had such an educated bottom, did you? Well, there's a good reason why all yoga postures are called asanas. Oh, I love that one. Where does he get them from? But it's true. The start of your spirituality. Unless you have strong legs, how can you stand? If you all think you're going to get to heaven just by banging your head against the wall, you're not going to get very far. Each of the seven parallel processes of the brain has to be activated, de-blocked, made pristine, and got working. And if you have any disease, if you have any accident in any part of your body, then the disease comes in from the spiritual, through the chakra, through the emotions, and into the physical. And sometimes it takes 20 years for that defect to work its way through. So, if you have ever had a disease, if you've ever had an accident, then you know which of your parallel processes, because it's the chakra closest to the disease or the accident, that shows you that you are not perfect. Now, I know everybody here thinks of themselves as perfect, but really, it's the ego, the selfishness, that's telling you that you know how to handle life, that you know how to cope with it. And the first lesson of spirituality is humility. I mean, we all know we've got problems here, but we don't know that this bit of yourself, miles away from it, is the cause. So in spirituality, we start off with the physical, because it's the closest place to start. You know, to meditate, you don't need to sit in the lotus posture all day long. Satchidananda was talking away, playing, giving people hugs, in a deep state of meditation. I mean, why do they tell you to go and sit facing the wall for 10 years in a complete state of cross-leggedness? I mean, it seems absolutely ludicrous, doesn't it? Stupid. Why do they tell you to go and sit there with your legs crossed? Simply because it's a physical exercise to clear out your base chakra. All you have to sit in the cross-legged pose for. That's why. So, if you can't sit in the lotus posture, you're not very good, are you? You're just not enlightened, are you? No. And if you really work at it, you can clear out the base chakra very quickly indeed. It doesn't take a lot of working at. But as well as the physical, you need to work on the emotions through the breathing. At the same time, remember when we were chanting, there was a visualization, there was a breathing, and there was a sound. We were moving some of the energies, some of the blockages to these parallel processes to the brain to completely get rid of them. And there's a feedback that comes from this. As you do this to your body, it becomes flexible. It becomes less tense. Because your body is a temple. It has been given to you. And how much is your body worth? I mean, they did call it the $6 million man at one time, didn't they? And they say that the state does not give you handouts. You have been given the $6 million man to inhabit for as long as your life on this planet. Now, if you care to put diesel into a petrol engine body, if you want to fill it up with chocolate, if you want to get, if you need to have a decoke every 5 years, there's no difference between the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. It is all one. And the purpose of spirituality is to clear out the whole body mind. And you know how well you're doing when you have the capacity to clear your mind. Not just the intellectual function, but also the bottom of your deepest bottom. And how do you know when you've done it? When your legs are flexible. Why do you think all these yogis for 5,000 years have been contorting their bodies into knots? Swami Satchidananda said, because he's the president of the British Wheel of Yogina, he said, look, all you 4,000 yoga teachers who teach yoga all over the country, he said, you're useless. What? Stands back in amazement. He says, there's people down that circus down the road can do yoga 10 times better than you. Because you can clear out the body and not necessarily have cleared out the emotions. It's a good start, but it's not enough. If you just clear out the body, it doesn't go back through the emotions to the mental, to the spiritual. No. Best way is to clear out the spiritual through the mental, through the emotional, into the body. And that's the way it's done. You know when you have cleared up your emotions. You know, you might be a big, strong guy. You might be able to lift 100 pounds or something and do press-ups and all the rest of it. You might be very strong. But have you noticed how when somebody goes up to one of these Arnold Schwarzenegger guys, or women, and says to them, hey, you're a bit of an idiot, aren't you? They used to say, the Marines, you know, the other people in the army used to say about the Marines, well, I might not be very bright, but I'm very strong. When you say to them something that they don't like, they sort of chase you, run after you, and duff you up. How strong your emotions. Because it's not enough to tie yourself in knots. God, it sounds like a big chore, this spirituality, doesn't it? I mean, you begin to think, how do we go about doing this? And I can tell you that if you see a little bit of improvement to your body-mind, and you feel that improvement going on week by week, month by month, year by year, you will be very happy. Because you know that you are climbing the ladder. But if you don't bother doing any practice, if you don't bother working on your heart center, if you don't bother working on your base chakra, if you don't bother working on your crown chakra, if you don't bother doing anything, then the chances are, if you don't have it in life, that you will go down. You will devolve instead of evolving. And it's very easy for a person to die in this life. Remember, God is not your favorite uncle. And you do it to yourself. Energy enhancement, stage one, deals with the grounding of negative energies. It teaches you how to... Well, I was going to say something, but I don't want to shock you too much. I've got to wait until I know you a bit better. You know how when you go to the toilet... and what comes out of your bottom? Hey, go on, tell me, what comes out of your bottom? That's it. Shit comes out of your base chakra. Now, this is your body's means of Excuse me. If you want to learn more, each of these tapes is one of my previous tapes. This is my first tape I ever did about a year ago. My first talk I ever gave. They get better as they go along. But they're full of the most astoundingly interesting information. And you might like to buy one at the end of the... Yes. Because, you know, I can go on forever. Well, where was I? Ah, yes. Shit. nothing personal. No. The base chakra. Its purpose is to get rid of negativity. Now, what happens when you take your shit and you put it on the ground? What do you call it then? What do you call it then? Manure. What's another word for it? Compost. Another word. Come on. Fertilizer. I knew you'd get to it eventually. It's called fertilizer. Now, it's very amazing, you see, because all these trees and grass and flowers and all the rest of it, they don't care that it's shit. They eat it. And they go, yum, yum. And what do they produce? We plough the fields and scatter. And what do we get back at the end of it all? We get back food, don't we? Yeah? The earth is a shit processor. And if your base chakra is blocked, how can you get rid of your waste products? You're constipated. And just because you can go to the toilet doesn't mean that you're not emotionally constipated or mentally constipated or spiritually constipated. And as you clear out your base chakra, as you connect, and Goethe said, connect, only connect, then you can get rid of all of your blockages, all of your negative energies, all of your negative emotions, all of your negative physical ailments, because the function, or one of the functions of the base chakra, is to shovel the shit. It's to get rid of all of your negativity from all of your chakras, from all of your body-mind. It gives you a good clear-out. And this is the function of Energy Enhancement Stage 1. We teach you meditation based upon many masters with lots of practical techniques. We teach you the movement of energy around the body to teach you how to clear out, using the breath, using visualization, to clear out every chakra, front and back. We teach you the grounding of negative energies. So just with stage one, you're provided with a firm foundation to go on with the rest of the seven stages, which lead you higher and higher. Begin at the beginning, start at the bottom, clear it out, get to the top. And this is not new. There's nothing new in energy enhancement. Do you know what the first formula of alchemy is? Well, if you don't, I'm going to tell you. You know how in alchemy they sort of had acids and copper and mercury and all these various constituents, and the function of alchemy was to change base metal into gold. Now, many avaricious people went into alchemy because they wanted to make gold, the element gold. But the real alchemists who were interested in evolving, they called this element gold fool's gold. And, you know, they had to use this code, because if they didn't, they would have been put upon the stake and they would have been burnt to death. Because when you have a mono-religion which is intolerant and not ecumenical, as it is at the moment, about all the other religions, if they don't understand that every person is a child of God, and if they don't do the right thing, they will surely suffer. But if they move in the direction of the one God, they will evolve. But at that time, the Catholic Church, the Holy Roman Empire, was very intolerant. And any other person using any other techniques other than going to the church and buying a pope, because the Pope was a bit avaricious in those days as well. That's how you evolved in the Catholic Church. You went to the priest and said, look, here's 100 crowns, forgive me for being an adulterer. And the priest said, okay, why did I do? Good. So alchemy was put there as a code. And the first formula, the first thing they ever taught them was acid. Now acid is that which dissolves all your negativity. And the Latin name for acid is vitriol. And each letter of the word vitriol stands for another Latin word. So, V-I-T-R-I-O-L. Well, O-L at the end stands for occultem lapidem. Lapidem, stone, occultem, hidden, hidden stone, philosopher's stone. What changes base metal into gold? The philosopher's stone, the catalyst. It's the secret of the philosopher's stone that people have been searching for hundreds of years. So what does VIT stand for? Visita interiore terrae. Visit the interior of the earth. Because the earth is the base chakra, you know. That's where all the base metal is. RI, rectificando invenies. Invenies means there you find. Occultem lapidem. So you will find the philosopher's stone in the interior of the earth. Rectificando. Rectificando means the right leading of the spiritual force on the path of the soul. Because the whole nature of spirituality is that if you rectify the energy, if you change its direction from heaven to earth and from earth to heaven, then you will be leading the released force on the path of the soul. Again, remember, we're not teaching anything in energy enhancement which has not been talked about and taught for thousands of years. All of these techniques have their basis in the past. They work, and we're very serious about them. We are very serious gardeners. energy enhancement, stage three, is connection with higher levels of energy, with your soul, with the monad, to fill you up. Walt Whitman said, "I sing the body electric. With my armies I engirth thee and charge thee full of the charge of the soul." It's a bit like electricity. If you cannot earth this charge of energy, then you will explode. So much energy in the heart of the universe. To open up the crown chakra, to open up the heart of selflessness, we need to clear out all of our energy structure. And as a byproduct, we find we have more energy. That's a byproduct of being selfless. And if we have more energy, we have more beauty. For thousands of years, philosophers have been wondering, what is beauty? There's a guy, a philosopher, an English philosopher, wrote a whole book, 1,000 pages long, about what is beauty. And at the end, he came to the conclusion he didn't know what it was. There's no way he could describe it. Well, I've got a simple way of describing it. Energy is beauty. If you are an artist and you are powered by the higher powers of the soul and you create something, then with your mind, with your soul, you will so charge that painting with energy that anybody who looks at it will get that energy coming into them. They will have a transcendental experience of joy and of beauty. Why is a woman so beautiful? Why is a man so beautiful? Why, when they come together, are they so beautiful? Why is there such a flow of energy? Why do they have so much energy? Why is it so like electricity? Charged full, chock to the brim with energy. It's because their purpose is to fulfill one of the functions of God on this planet, to create babies. You know, to bring a soul down to this earth, to allow it to gestate in the womb, takes a tremendous amount of energy. And to start that process off requires a tremendous amount of energy. But that is only chakra number two. There is more. That's only the start. And energy is beauty. And the law of thermodynamics states, energy always flows from an area of high concentration to low concentration. You know, there's so much energy on this planet. All you have to do is to unblock yourselves, to stop presenting the barrier to that energy, and you too can be charged full of the charge of the soul. You can have energy coming from your fingertips. You can have the energy to do so much because we are the hands of God on this planet. And unless we can charge ourselves full of energy, how can we do selfless work for the benefit of all of humanity? How can this planet change sufficiently? Because there are so many bad things on this planet. And you know, you sit in your little room watching the TV all day long going, woe is me. It's all my mother's fault. You are not taking responsibility for yourself. It is your job, your test, to clear out all of these psychological problems, all of these emotional problems, all of these physical problems. It is your test. And when you've passed your test, you get the reward. You have energy. You are able to do. You have the capacity to develop enthusiasm, entheos, within yourself. You have no diseases. You have no negative emotions. You have a clear and calm mind, a tabula rasa, for the finger of God to write upon it. You have an overflowing heart, which simply wants to help. And then energy, this is beauty. This is what beauty is all about. It's actually doing something good. How much more time have I got, Gwen? I've got up to stage two so far. You'll have to buy the tapes, I'm sorry. No chance for any questions, they've had that. Anyway, first of all, clearing out your base chakra, clearing out all your negativity, then filling yourself up with the energy of the soul, and then using that energy to clear out the energy of negativity, of blockage, between you and your mummy, you and your daddy and your children and all your close personal relationships. We are held in place by these vast energies of negativity between you and everybody around you. Sometimes these relationships are very, very bad indeed. We need to clear them out. Sometimes these energies are okay. We're fine. There's no problem there. And that goes for everything that I say, by the way. Some people will be more problems in one area than in another. These are just general problems that the whole of humanity has. To forgive. It's a function of the heart, by the way. To forgive everybody in your life. You know, it's their fault. But I think there's one of the masters said, "Forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do." How much pain have you created in your life by an unkind word? Hope for forgiveness. You know, forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. It is necessary to evolve to forgive. But not the mental concept of forgiveness, the energy concept. You can do this without thinking well of anybody, you just clear out the energy. We teach you the techniques to clear out the negative energies between you and all the people that are close to you. That's one, two, and three. Four, the mastery of close personal relationships. And by that I mean the pain of bereavement, the pain of splitting up, the pain of divorce. These pains, these additions to your emotional IQ, if you do not have this, you can die because of it. It's that strong. Nothing intellectual about this at all. You can think about it intellectually, but when it happens, do you have the connections in place? Do you have the forgiveness in place? Do you have the techniques to move on. Many people have. Remember, energy enhancement has everything that you need, but some people need more of it than others. When a woman came to the Buddha and said, "Look, my parents just died. His husband fell out of his motor car." Mind you, this was about 2,000 years ago. He fell off his ox. Doesn't matter, does it? He's dead. "My children just drowned in the river. What shall I do?" Well, I could have said, do energy enhancement stage 4. But the Buddha said, "Here, here's a plate. Go around every town, go around every house in the town, and ask for a mustard seed from every family that hasn't had that." And she came back 4 hours later and she didn't have anything on her plate. Everybody goes through the same problems. And until they happen, you don't know how you're going to, if you're going to pass the test. Because there is an energy relationship between you and your parents. There is an energy relationship between you and your partner. There is an energy relationship between you and your children. And these energies are like taut elastic bands. And when those elastic bands are cut, they snap back into the body in an explosion of pain and of grief. Nothing intellectual about it. This is simply energy. And we teach you how to overcome these problems before they occur. So the first three stages are to get rid of the negativity you have already in place. Stage 4 is so that you never have that pain ever again. So you can be like a mother who lets her son go off to university and says, "Bye, son. You need to go off to grow, to learn in other ways. I still love you, even though you are thousands of miles away. You don't have to be close to me." It is the mastery of dependence. You've heard of dependent relationships. It is how to gain independence in a loving relationship. Mastery of the pain of bereavement, mastery of the pain of splitting up, so we can let go. So we can forgive. So we can still love, because hate is a poison inside of us that eats away at our vitals and gives us cancer. It is a cancer, an emotional cancer within our bodies. This is not intellectual. You cannot do these things intellectually. These are purely energetic phenomena. How to deal with them? And for that, you need the energy of energy enhancement. Stage 5, I'm going to slow down now a bit, by the way. I could go into more details about this, but I want to go into other things. Stage 5 is cleaning the ties that bind. Stage 6 is getting rid of these higher levels of energy that we were talking about. Stage 7 is dealing with energy blockages in every part of the aura, how to get rid of them, how to explode them, get rid of them. And how to be free, because we are programmed in so many different ways, habitually, without thinking, to do various things. And we need to clear out those old programs so that we can be free and to have energy to do what we need to do on this planet. Because each one of us has a job, you know. Do you know that? We've all got a job. We took the contract when we came down here. And your job is to overcome your disabilities, because All of us are not perfect, are we, Gwen? Well, I'm speaking for myself. All of us are not perfect. We need to acknowledge that, and we need to use some ancient practice that has proved its worth. And the very least of these is meditation. It's a good start. If anybody wants to meditate, that can help this clear out. But it's not enough on its own. I'll finish off with a story. On the outskirts of Athens in Greece, there is a temple. And that temple has inscribed upon its walls pictures of grapes, pictures of ears of corn, pictures of the fruits of the earth. And this temple, from thousands of years, was devoted to the goddess Persephone and Demeter. All great teaching comes down to us by means of a symbol. Why not words? Because it is easy to add a paragraph to a great work. And I think in the Council of Nicaea in 608 AD, they took great tracts out of the Bible at the behest of the Holy Roman Emperor, Constantine, who wanted to use Christianity as a means of control. So he edited the Bible. And all the texts that come down to us from every great religion in the world have been fiddled about with. You know, they've added a bit here, they've taken a bit out there, you know. But there's still some really great stuff there. You know what I mean? I mean, it's, Jesus Christ was okay, mate. He sort of said a few good things. So it's still there. But some of the things have been taken away. And they're finding these things now in the Dead Sea Scrolls, in the Gospels of John. They're all coming together. You know, and they're having some historical resonance of finding out these things. But this happens to every great religion. And this is known. This is known by every master. And so they create symbols because they just look like nice designs. You know what I mean? Nobody knows what they mean. It's like vitriol, a Latin word. You know, it's put there. Nobody knows what it means, so they don't bother to change it. I was heartbroken when I went to Egypt, you know. All these fantastic temples, all these beautiful statues, and everyone with its nose broken. Somebody comes along, whoa, I don't like that god, smash. I don't like this temple, Hatshepsut, smash. And this is what happens, you see, because for some reason people are prejudiced. They're just not perfect. They think they know. Whereas they're just not enlightened. You've got to forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. But this great beauty of the past, this great heritage, is continuously being smashed. And that is why, in every age, the stuff has to be given anew. And the only source that can be trusted is that of prophecy. But that prophecy must be based, to be true, upon the ancient books of the past. It hasn't just got to come out of your brain, you know. It's got to be based in reality. It's got to be a lot of understanding there as well. So the great masters of the past, they said things to you by means of symbol. Vitriol, the yin-yang sign, is a tremendous symbol. Star of David, the seal of Solomon. All of these things are the nub, the great source of the religion that came out of it. But to understand these things, you have to understand about meditation. It's no good being told about vitriol if you don't know how to meditate, because it is a meditation. It's something to use. It's not something to go, oh, vitriol, 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 take me up to heaven. It is a practice. It's something to do that has an effect that is scientifically validated by the effect it has on the people that do it. And meditation is one of those things, but it is not enough. Once, when Bishtaspa, king of Persia, was returning from a victorious campaign, he came near to the place where Zarathustra lived. You've heard of Zarathustra, haven't you? Anybody ever seen 2001, The Space Odyssey? It's where he goes, da 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 da. You know? Well, that's Thus Spake Zarathustra. Yeah, that's what the music's called. Yeah? It comes in, you know, into all these things. No, don't laugh. Oh, go on, laugh. I don't mind you laughing, it's all right. Anyway, so there he is, Zarathustra. Da 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 da. Zarathustra. Nietzsche wrote his philosophical work about Zarathustra. Yeah? He was misinterpreted, you know, but he was okay with Nietzsche in his way. Once, when Vishtaspa, king of Persia, was returning from a victorious campaign, he came near to the place where Zarathustra lived. He decided to visit the mystic, because he was a mystic, you know. He was a master. He had a monastery. Young people used to come to him for training. The king said to Zarathustra, I have come that you may explain to me the laws of nature and of the universe. I cannot tarry as I am on my way home from a war, and important matters of state await me at my palace. I don't know. I find this a lot, you know, talking to people. Well, you know, I'd like to come along for a retreat or do energy enhancement, but you know, I've got all these things to do. Very important things. Looking at the king, Zarathustra smiled. Well, you would, wouldn't you? And took a grain of wheat from the earth and gave it to him. He said, in this small grain of wheat, he declared, are contained all the laws of the universe and the forces of nature. The king was much astonished by his answer, which he did not understand. And when he saw smiles on the faces of the monks around him, he was angry. And he threw the grain upon the ground, thinking that he was being mocked. And to Zarathustra, he said, foolish to waste my time by coming to see you. Years passed. The king was successful as a ruler and a warrior, and led a life of luxury and apparent contentment. But at night, when he went to bed, strange thoughts came into his mind and troubled him. I live in luxury. But he didn't have a TV, though. But he didn't have Nikon stereo. Never mind. You know, we live like kings, we people. I bet he didn't have a washing machine. Well, he didn't need one. He had slaves for that, didn't he? They were the washing machines in those days, the slaves. I think we have wage slaves in these days, don't we? Well, somebody's got to do the work. I mean, somebody's got to live in luxury, right? That's all right, it's good. I live in luxury and abundance in this splendid palace. But how long shall I enjoy this? This abundance, this power, this wealth. And what will happen to me when I die? I could have told him. I could have said, was it 54? 49? 56? Nobody ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? That's the one. 47. And they asked the computer, what is 6 times 9? And it came up with the answer 47. I thought it was great, though. But that's the meaning of live. He said, what will happen when I die? Have you ever thought about that, Mrs.? Base chakra. Connected with security. Connected with fear of losing your money, fear of losing your house, fear of losing your children and your husband. Last of all, connected with the fear of death. What will happen when I die, he said. Can my power and my riches save me from the illness and death? Is everything lost with the coming of death? No one in the palace could answer these questions, but meanwhile, the fame of Zarathustra. Da da da, da da. Sorry, grew. So putting aside his pride, he dispatched a great caravan of treasure to Zarathustra, and with it an invitation and a request. I regret, he wrote, that when I was impatient and thoughtless in my youth, I asked you to explain the great problems of existence in a few minutes of time. I have changed. And do not want the impossible now. But I am still deeply interested to know the laws of the universe and the forces of nature. Even more so than when I was a young man. Come to my palace, I pray you. Or if that is not possible, then send to me the best of your disciples, that he may teach me all that he can about these questions. After an interval, the caravan and the messengers returned. These told the king that they had found Zarathustra, who sent him greeting, but returned the proffered treasure. These treasures, Zarathustra had said, were of no use to him, because he has attained to the ultimate treasure. Moreover, Zarathustra had sent the king a gift wrapped in a leaf, and had asked the messengers to tell him that this was the teacher who could teach him everything. Oh. The king opened it and found that same grain again. The same grain of wheat that Zarathustra had given him before. He thought there must be something mysterious and magical in it, so he put it in a golden box and hid it among his treasures. Almost every day he looked at it, expecting some miracle to happen. Oh, holy grain of wheat! Please show me the secrets of the universe. Almost every day, he looked at it expecting some miracle to happen, or something that would teach him all he wished to know. Months went by, and then years, but nothing happened. At long last, the king lost patience and said, It seems that Zarathustra has deceived me again. Either he is making a mock of me, or else he does not know the answers to my questions. But I will show him that I can find the answers without his help. So the king sent a caravan to a great Indian mystic, Chengragacha. I could barely say that. Chengragacha. Good. Yes, got that. To whom came disciples from all over the world. And with the caravan went the same messengers and the same treasure that he had once sent to Zarathustra. After many months, the messengers returned from India with the philosopher. But the philosopher said to him, I am honored to be your teacher. But in frankness, I must tell you that I came chiefly to your country that I may meet the great Zarathustra. Da, 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 da. I don't know. The king took the golden box containing the grain of wheat and answered, I asked Zarathustra to teach me. See, this is what he sent me. Here is the teacher who shall teach me the laws of the universe and the forces of nature. Is this not ridiculous? The philosopher looked long at the grain of wheat, and silence fell upon the palace while he meditated. At length, he said, I do not regret my many months of journeying, for now I know that Zarathustra is in truth the great teacher that I have long believed him to be. This tiny grain of wheat can indeed teach us all the laws of the universe and the forces of nature, for it contains them in itself right now. The nature of a grain of wheat is nothing if it is kept in a palace. The nature of a grain of wheat is nothing if it is kept in the lap of luxury. The nature of a grain of wheat is nothing if it is kept in a golden box or a golden cage. The nature of wheat is that it is planted in the earth. The nature of wheat is that the radiance of God shines down upon it. The nature of wheat is that it needs to be fed and watered, and only then can it evolve. Only then can it grow. And as Goethe said, connect. Only connect. And as we plant ourselves in meditation deep in the earth, as we connect to the energy and the radiance of God, so then can we evolve. Because we are not separate. We are not alone. We are all one. And only by connecting can we grow into our true nature. You must not keep the grain of wheat in a golden box. You are missing the whole point. If you plant this little grain in the earth, where it belongs, in contact with the earth, the rain and the air, and the sunshine, and the light of the stars, because it is not enough just to connect with the sun, the whole of astrology, the whole of the universe, we are connected to. Then, like a universe in itself, it will begin to grow bigger and bigger. Likewise, you, if you would grow in knowledge and understanding, must leave your artificial life and go where you will be close to the forces of nature and of the universe, to the sum total of things. Just as an inexhaustible sources of energy are ever flowing towards the grain planted in the earth, so will innumerable sources of knowledge open and flow towards you, till you become one with nature and the organic universe. If you watch the growth of this seed of grain, you will find that there is an indestructible and mysterious power in it, the power of life. The grain disappears, and in that disappearance, there is a victory over death. Oh.